Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So this is the first episode that we're doing for National Adoption Week here in the UK. This will be going out on Tuesday, the 19th of October. Today's Monday, the 18th. And welcome to the show, Dominic.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
You're an absolute star. We've Dominic and I have just been having a bit of a catch up and introduction before we get into it, and you are in for a treat. This is one inspirational guy.
Thank you.
So can you tell the listeners who you are and maybe share a little bit about your story, Dominic?
Yeah, so my name is Dominic Paul. I am originally, well, I was adopted from Thailand when I was 6 months old. I have obviously been in the UK now since, 6 months old. So I was 30 at the weekend. So that is a good 29 and a half years. I would like to think my story was quite interesting in the sense that I am one of three kids adopted. I am the middle child. I do have a younger sister that was also adopted from Thailand, an older sister that was adopted from Ecuador, South America, and obviously adopted into a British white family. Where do I begin? So basically, my parents had tried to have biological children of their own, and it was a situation where, unfortunately, it just didn't happen. And adoption was always one of those things that they wanted to do as well as having kids of their own. They wanted to have a biological child, adopt a biological child and adopt. They wanted four kids altogether. But unfortunately, because it didn't go the way that they planned on it being, obviously they did everything with the adoption way. So they ended up doing, it was supposed to be girl, boy. And when they reached my sister, obviously, Florence, who was also adopted from Thailand as well, that they were like, no, okay, I think three kids is enough. We don't want any more than this. But I would like to say my story was really fascinating because, unfortunately, our adopted mother passed away 4 years ago from a 10-year battle with cancer. So for me, I feel very much, you know, sort of, I need to make a legacy live on, because when my mother was alive, she used to do a lot of stuff for adoption as well in our local area in Maidstone. And she would sit on the panel and help those that wanted to adopt kids of their own and to give her side of what, you know, adoption's about. Because as we know, you know, adoption can be quite a complicated thing and people don't know where to begin, especially with, I would say, international adoptions. That's not as easy. I mean, it's a lot easier now, but back then it wasn't easy at all. So my thing was, when she wasn't going to be around anymore, I was going to make sure that her legacy lived on. So hence why now I'm doing a lot of stuff for IAC and just making awareness, especially on Adoption Month, you know, that adoption isn't the scary. You know, I'd love to tell people my story, because, you know, you hear all these things in the press about adoption and how, you know, some people don't have the greatest experiences and others do have great experiences. But I just want people to know that there are some good outcomes with adoption and it is a wonderful thing. And, you know, I think children need to be given these chances in life. And if you've got the space for a child, then why not go down the adoption route?
Yeah. So happy birthday for the weekend.
Thank
330. Was that a big milestone for you? Did you feel like I'm a grown up now?
A big milestone. I think for me, it was more security. It was more knowing myself, because being adopted, have had struggles. I've obviously gone through different questions in my mind about, you know, why was I put up for adoption and, you know, what would my life be like? Because it's funny, since sort of starting all of this ambassador stuff that I'm doing for IAC, I've learned more about my adoption. And it's funny because I was always brought up knowing about me being an adopted, you know, it wasn't a secret. It was always very open. But I'll be honest with you, I didn't ask the questions that I should have asked. And, you know, I sort of thought when I was going to go down this route of talking about adoption, I needed to learn even more about my story. So I've sort of opened up this book with regards to everything with my adoption. And there's stuff that I've learned recently, and I won't lie, it has sort of triggered emotions in me that I thought, oh gosh, I didn't realize I'd be that upset about it. Because, you know, it's one of those things where I guess, because I never asked any questions, I thought everything was hunky-dory, everything was fine. But as time's gone on and I've asked questions to my father and asked him about the adoption, I've heard more things. And, you know, it hits you, because adoption is a very special thing, but at the same time, it's an emotional roller coaster, you know, especially when you are learning about your story. And I think for me, you know, I think to myself, being from Thailand, and I go back there every year on vacation anyway, but the reason why I do is because I want to learn about my culture. I think that's a main part of me, is that I'm still learning about, as much as I've been raised in a British family, learning about the British ways and, you know, being around, I'd say, white people a lot of the time, especially where I lived in Kent, being in a very white farmer area, you know, I was sort of the odd person, you know, me and my sister stuck out like a sore thumb. So being able to go to Thailand, especially when I hit a certain age on my own with my partner, I was able to really learn my culture, where I was from, and understand what my life maybe could have been like. And the funny thing I always say when I am in Thailand is, you know, I don't know anything really about whether I have any siblings. Obviously, I don't know what my birth mother or my birth father look like. So I always think I could be walking past relatives that I have no idea about. But being that I was brought up in a UK, brought up in the UK, I obviously only speak English. So if I was to meet someone or to find my birth family, I wouldn't really understand anything. So, and it's funny because people ask me whether I have a connection to Thailand, and I do. I'm so Thai by heart. You know, people say to me, you do certain mannerisms that are very, very Thai, you know, and it's funny how, you know, it's built in our genes, but, you know, and I've naturally sort of gone down that route of wanting to really know more. And I do things very Thai now, as you know, as well as being very British. So, but I like that because I'm having both cultures in my life, not just one culture, which is obviously the British way. I am sort of bringing in the Thai elements as well.
Yeah. Wow. So as a white guy that was adopted by white folks, what I've seen is that this kind of what people call transracial element often brings another layer of complexity, or to use your metaphor, you know, it probably makes the roller coaster a little bit more up and down, I guess. That's what I've heard from a lot of other guests that we've had on the show. Yes. So if you want to check that, listeners, there's some great episodes with a guy called Isaac Atta, another episode with Nathan Ross, who are, we've had a Danish lady, Ranjana. So we've got lots of, and So what it seemed to me, I would say that the transracial element adds another layer of complexity.
Yes.
You seem to have skipped it, though. To me, just like in just talking to you, it doesn't seem to be as big an issue to you.
It's really funny you say that, because I guess being brought up in the era that I was, there were certain people that would say certain names to me and my sisters, and even some family members, the older generation, that did say some words that I guess, you know, would be very tough to hear. And I mean, I didn't ever hear them, but my parents said this was said, you know. But back then, you think 30 years ago, it was, you know, it was very backwards. It wasn't like it was now. And, you know, my parents never sort of wrapped us up in cotton wool, you know, to protect us all the time. They kind of let us learn from mistakes and realize what the world was about. But no, if I recall my childhood, I never was picked. I guess, you know, look, very obvious. I am obviously a gay guy. If I'm honest, I was picked on, I would say, 80%, if not 90% on being gay than I was being an Asian person in a very white area in Kent. You know, it was, and the same with my sisters. Obviously they're straight, but you know, they never really had any issues either. So yeah, it was very much skipped. I don't know why, but I guess maybe the schools that we went to. I mean, I do recall of a girl in the year above who was Indian. And in my secondary school as well, there was more international students that had flown in. So I guess maybe the schools that I went to played a massive part of it. But I do remember, you know, especially in the area that we lived, it was in the middle of nowhere in Cranbrook in Kent, very, very farm family. It was all these, like, we lived next door to a farm. Everyone on our road was pretty, well, everyone was white except us. But no one ever really said anything. There was never really, I guess, there was never really anything. It was, I think my mum and my dad said to me when we were younger and they had said that they were going to adopt Asian children, there were obviously some very strong words brought up saying, why would you want to adopt those sort of children? You know, but my mum was very much, and my father too, you know, a kid's a kid. Doesn't matter what colour they are. Why does that matter? You know, and that's what was so refreshing about the two of them. They're such inspirations. But, you know, like I said, we were never sort of wrapped up in cotton wool. But I guess, yeah, we skipped that very much so. I guess it was where they maybe put us in schools, you know, were a lot more open. And yeah, we never really got picked on that.
Okay. There's so much in there. I'm trying to think as the to sum thing the area that I'd like to explore next into one single question. So I think, well, first question is then, your mum and dad said that your mum and dad didn't wrap you in cotton wool, and you were aware,
yes,
of the comments that you were getting, they were getting from other people. You never experienced them directly, but no. they didn't. So can you remember sort of what age that was? When were you aware, you know, your parents were essentially warning you,
yes,
of what the world outside was like, but yes. but you weren't experiencing it. You were kind of, they were telling you what they were getting from other people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they didn't tell us when we were very young because we wouldn't understand that sort of thing. I guess when I first made aware of it, I want to say I was around 13, 14.
Okay.
And it was a situation where, you know, it was very open, the whole thing of us being adopted. I should also say they took us back to our orphanages when we were younger to see where we came from, because, you know, for us it was, not that we were, I'll be honest with you, we weren't really that keen on knowing about things back then. We were kind of like, oh, we're happy as we are. You know, yeah, we were adopted, but we don't really want to go back. You're our parents. And they loved that. However, they still wanted us to know where we came from, because it's a big thing in our lives. It's not, you know, it's not like, oh, you can sort of brush under the carpet and forget about it. It was a big thing being adopted, whether you're from an international country or within the UK. But I was made aware of it around 13, 14. But it was a situation where I remember my mum said, I can't remember which side of the family it was, that our great grandmother was not keen at all and said, why would you want to adopt that sort of child? And I won't lie, that did hurt me. However, I wasn't around then. You know, I think she passed away maybe a few months or so before I was actually brought back to the UK. So it kind of didn't affect me in that way. But I know there was other conversations made from, you know, certain people around us, not family, I would say people that maybe live locally that would kind of stare or make judgment on, you know, gosh, why would you want brown children? Why wouldn't you get you know, white children. Because my mum said to me once, you know, it was one of those things that people were quite shocked that they wanted to adopt internationally, and especially from Asia and South America, you know, sort of, because I think if you adopt, you know, some people think you'd want to adopt a child that was the similar color to yourself. So it didn't look so obvious. But what was so refreshing about them was that they didn't care, you know, they didn't care at all. I guess it was because they were well traveled and they are so open minded. But to them, a child was a child.
Okay. So I think you've put your finger on it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't care.
No, they didn't.
They didn't care. So I'm getting goosebumps, actually, as you say that, because when I was asking you before,
yeah,
you were talking all the things that we're talking about were external things.
Yes.
And where I think the difference that makes the difference is in the internal things. So. Yeah. So I might be being a bit shrinky here. I'm not a shrink, right?
No.
Okay. So if I'm being out of order,
just
tell me, right? So because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I hear a lot of people kind of trying to reduce things to like really logical, platitudinal, slightly psycho babble. You know, that is kind of what I hear.
Yeah.
So my favorite one on this was I was listening to a podcast with the first black South African rugby captain. This guy's called Siya Kolisi.
Okay.
And it's Kolisi. It's like Game of Thrones, isn't it? Kolisi, but it's got nothing to do with this. This is guy's called Siya Kolisi. And he was interviewed on a podcast, and the host, one of the hosts said, was asking him about his leadership style.
Mm.
And Siya Kolisi says, it's just who I am.
Mm.
So the guy, everybody's trying to reduce things down to strategies, mindset hacks, you know, and psychology. And Siya Kolisi just says, "It's just who I am." And the guy, it takes a second for it to register, and then he asks him another question, trying to reduce what is in this guy's heart of this rugby captain into a strategy.
Mm.
So. And we're all looking for this. Like, we're like, how are we going to, how, so for me, how am I going to get more podcast listeners? You know, I'm looking for the strategies. Well, you know, that's not what life is about. You can't reduce it to a strategy.
No.
So my take on it is that you were less bothered because your parents were less bothered.
Yeah. That's very true, if I'm honest, because, you know, it wasn't one of those things where, I guess I've heard stories of other kids that have been adopted where their parents want them to go visit their birth parents. They want them to be in contact with them and say, we're very open to you having, you know, two parents in your lives and, you know, having a relationship with them if you want to. And don't get me wrong, that was the same sort of thing I would say with my parents. However, you have to remember that they don't speak English. I mean, I know obviously there's other international kids that are adopted, but, you know, they don't speak English at all. And Thai is not one of the easiest languages to learn. So there wouldn't be any connection, really. And because I was always opened to them, to us knowing that we were adopted from different countries, it was one of those things that because it was so open, I guess I didn't have really any need to go. And do you know what I mean? I didn't have, because it was so open. It wasn't a situation where I was like, oh, where am I from? People say that I'm this and I'm that. And you've always said that I was yours, but why am I brown? Like, it was never that. It was like, hey, this is where you're from. If you want to go back, you're more than welcome. We want to take you back to see your roots, but we are your parents. We love you. But there were another parent out there that did give birth to you for us to be able to have you. And I was like, well, if they didn't want me, you know, then I'm over the moon with someone that does want me. So I didn't feel sort of neglected. I was so loved all the time. I didn't need to. And I because it was so open, it was never a situation, I guess, that backfired on them. Do you know what I mean? Because you do hear some stories where kids aren't told and it backfires. I think if you've got to be very open about everything from start to finish.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, so what? So we can't reduce this to strategies. You know, we're all looking for strategies. Like me too. Like how I get more listeners to podcasts is the silly example that I give. That's silly.
Yes.
It's on the head. It's on my mind, right? And so what? Probably, you know, you were talking about another parent saying, you know, you can find your, you know, like. You can track your birth parents down and you can do this and you can do that. So that's because probably that parent has been told that that's the right way to do it.
Hmm.
Whereas what your mum and dad did was they were open. Like they were open about it.
Yes.
They gave you the opportunity. They took you back there. They took you back to the orphanage. So you knew. So so that kind of like, they satiated your curiosity, and to that extent, you weren't curious. But if you had been curious, then they would have let you do it. So they went with the, it seems to me, you know, they were open about it. They didn't chocolate coat it. Is that the word? They didn't chocolate coat it. So they said to you what other people were saying.
Yes.
In the family, so that you knew. And people would say, well, some people might say, well, no, we need to protect Dominic. We need to wrap in, you use the word wrapping in cotton wool. We need to make sure that he's not aware of what these other negative people, things are saying in the family. But they didn't do that. They were more open and then say, well, how do I be more open? Well, you know, if a parent, an adopted parent's listening, right, who's got a transracial, you know, they're white and they've adopted a child from Asia or a child from South America or whatever, then say, well, how do I do that? Well, there isn't a how. You make sure your child, you've got to lead your child, but then
allow them, I think, to make their own decision. You know, I think. You know, I think the way that my parents did it, I think is the right way. I think it's being open from start to finish, keeping that child up to date with what's been said, giving them the options that they want to explore, where they come from. I think when you start sort of protecting your child so much and you don't tell them a single thing that goes on, that's when it backfires. And I always say this, you know, one of the things with all the adoptions within my family, all of us three were involved in every other sibling's adoption. So when my older sister was made aware that I was coming into the picture, they were like, this is going to be your brother. He's also adopted. Although she was young, it was always making sure that we were aware that, oh, so another sibling's adopted too. Oh, okay. And this is where they're coming from. They, you know, you're not related by blood, but you will be when they come back because, you know, he will be your little brother. And it was the same with my younger sister. You know, I was told the same thing about her. And I think we were kept in the loop with absolutely everything. There was no sort of secret. And, you know, the child just turned up and they sort of said, oh, they're your blood, because obviously they're not. But I understand that, but they're both still my sisters and I love them dearly as if they were my biological sisters. And I think the way that my parents handled absolutely everything in my eyes, and I'm sure most people would agree, I think is definitely the right way to go down with regards to any adoption, but also especially any interracial adoptions as well.
What's the age difference? How old are your
sisters? So my older sister is 34 and my younger sister is 24.
Oh.
So we are like sort of, I mean, obviously there's a big gap between the youngest and the oldest, but I'm sort of bang in the middle. So I relate to the both of them.
Yeah. So do you remember being told about the about your younger sister coming in? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember like yesterday. I remember we were living in Taxfield, which is by Biggin Hill. And I remember like yesterday, this adoption, I can't remember, it was obviously someone from the adoption or the social service or something like that. Not too sure exactly who it was, but they came over and they wanted to have a conversation with me outside in the garden about, you know, there was a young sister that was going to be adopted and what did I feel about it? Did I want a sister and all of that? And, you know, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, okay, I'll have another sister. I think I was saying I want a brother because obviously, you know, there's me surrounded by so many beautiful women in my family, but hey ho, who can blame me? But at the same time, obviously I wanted a brother. But, you know, I was very open for it. And I remember it like yesterday, and especially when I remember that, I still remember the day, we still got footage of it, when we all flew out to Bangkok to go and get my younger sister. And we all went to the orphanage. We were so excited to get her and bring her back home and have her as part of the family. And, you know, and I remember sort of walking down this corridor, and it was like you sort of picture an orphanage to be, you know, it was sort of a dark room, low lights, and there were cots upon cots upon cots, you know, of babies. It was really sort of, I remember it like yesterday. I can't remember how old I was, but I remember that. And then there was a room at the very end of the adoption, of the baby room. And that's where my younger sister was. And we were told that we were only going there to go and see her and, you know, just get ourselves sort of introduced to her and then take her home in the next couple of days or so. But it was that same day that we went to go visit her. They were like, nope, you can take her back. You know, I remember all the different sounds from the Thai people, the voices. I didn't know what they were saying, but they always say Thai is wine when we talk, you know, it's always like, meh, meh. So I just remember that in my ears, and we took her home. We didn't have any nappies or any food. We're supposed to get that in Thailand to be able to look after her on her first couple of nights. We brought her back home, and all I remember is, it's still one of those things that really touches me. It makes me emotional thinking about it. She had never seen her reflection in the mirror. And I remember we brought her in. She's a little toddler. I can't remember how old she was. I think she was 16 months old or something. And she was just fascinated by her reflection in the mirror. You know, and you just think, that's so heartwarming. It's just so lovely to think that you brought this little child. She was never sad. She was happy from the start and still is the happiest little thing that I know. And, you know, and it's things like that. I think it's so lovely that our parents just included us on absolutely everything with regards to not just my story and my adoption, but with my sisters as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you mentioned being gay and getting more stick from outside for that.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. And you got more for that than you did for being
Asian. Yeah. It was one of those things, I guess, if I'm honest, I guess, yes, although we were the only sort of Asians, I was going to say in the village, sounds very Little Britain, doesn't it? But there were still Asians in the sense of, you know, Chinese restaurants and Indian restaurants nearby. And there were some sort of little families that were at the school, so it wasn't like we were the only ones at school, but in our village, yes, we were the only ones. So when it came to obviously me growing up and being my authentic self, I was the oddball. You know, I was very feminine, you know, totally different to the other kids out there. So that was something I was picked on over my race. And it's funny because I've had a few little things said to me, you know, go back to your own country, and you could imagine other words being used as well. But nothing really that I can pinpoint and think that was terrible. It was more just me being gay that really did stand out. But, you know, I'll be honest, I'm from Thailand, so what do you expect, you know? So it's one of those situations where I'm proud. I am I haven't got anything to be ashamed of. I love the person that I am. Again, parents were so unbothered. It was not a thing to them. It was like, we still love you. Why would we care anything different? You're a child. And, you know, what amazing people they are to be like that, not only to adopt, but I guess to then have a child that also comes out as gay, but not to be bothered at all, because in their eyes, it was like, why would we want to abandon you? Like some of these stories you do hear of kids coming out as gay or transgender or, you know, lesbian, whatever, you know, they were like, you're still our child. We still went down that whole process of a few years of adopting you and wanting children. Why would we want to then turn around and go, we brought you to the UK and we want to abandon you, get out, sort of thing? Because unfortunately, that probably has happened to some kids out there. But why does it matter? You know, and again, they were the most amazing and are the most amazing people I have ever met. And my mum as well, you know, she was obviously around most of the time, being a stay-at-home mum, but just an incredible human being she was, to bring me up and to introduce me to some of her LGBTQ plus friends that she has in her life. And they were almost like second fathers to me, some of them, just sort of, I guess, being someone I could sort of relate to and talk to if I wanted to understand, you know, what was going on.
Yeah. It's it's bringing me back to the Sia Khaleesi rugby captain guy.
Yeah.
It's who your parents were, isn't it? It's kind of like where they were coming from, who they were, how open they were.
Can I just,
how realistic?
Yeah, you're right, because I've always said this, when it comes to any person that wants to adopt, you have to be a certain type of person to adopt. You know what I mean? You need to be someone that doesn't care. You need to be someone that is so open to things, you know, because I always hear things where people say you need to be wealthy to adopt. You need to have a big house and you need to have a good job. And you think, no, that's not the case. You just need to be a certain type of person that generally does not care and that is going to be so open to absolutely any hurdle that's thrown your way, whether it's your sexuality, whether it's a disability, you know, any type of something that is brought up in your life, you need to be able to deal with it and not sort of think, oh gosh, I can't deal with this. I don't know what to do. You know, because you do hear, as you probably know as well, a lot of stories where unfortunately kids have been sort of sent back because it hasn't worked out for them. But, you know, not every adoption's like that. You have to carry on, you know, not just adoptions, but kids in general aren't easy, but you just have to stick by those children and just ride those waves. It's not always going to be like that, you know? And, you know, I want to just throw this in, but IAC is one of the most amazing charities I've worked with, because they honestly hold your hand from start to finish. And the long-term care that they give you is just incredible. Because my parents, I was asking my dad the other day, what was it like when you were adopted from Asia? He said the Thais were just brilliant when it came to our adoption. But he said, I'll be honest with you, Dom, you know, we were lucky because obviously we had adopted your older sister from abroad. So we already knew the process when it came to you and your younger sister's adoption. But when they first started off completely, they were like, where do we start? Where do we begin? And, you know, even to this day now, people are still confused. Where do I adopt? Where do I start? And, you know, and ICA is incredible because they are kind of like, I always say, a one-stop shop. You know, they sort of help you every step of the way with the journey. But back then, where did you go? Who could you ask? It was sort of like a needle in a haystack to really find out. And people, you know, especially with my parents, my dad was saying to me the other day when I was asking some questions, you know, he had to really do his research and take his time because, you know, there were so many things thrown his way. And why do you want to adopt from Asia and Ecuador? Why don't you adopt from the UK? And they were adamant that they had to adopt from Asia you know, so it was one of those things where he was, nope, sorry, you're not going to change my mind. I don't want a white child. I want an Asian child, because they're not, yes, there are kids in the UK that need adopting, but there also needs to be kids. There's also kids abroad that need to be adopted as well, that need homes. And I should also mention, the reason why they wanted to adopt from Asia was because Asia isn't a wealthy country. A lot of people adopt a lot of the time within their own countries or within their own families. But my parents were like, why wouldn't we adopt a child from Asia? Because, you know, there's no wealth, not to be horrible, but back then there wasn't any wealth. There wasn't money to be able to give the kids what they deserved. So he wanted to give children a second chance in life and to bring them back from that country.
Yeah. What would you say to... So I'm, you know, like you're saying that you're finding out more now you're coming into the kind of the adoption world. I am too. And one of the things is, you know, this jargon stuff, right? So interracial adoption, right? So what would you say to interracial adoptees who are listening to this and perhaps are struggling a bit because they haven't, you know, I talked about this layer of complexity that often...
Yes.
And there seems to be in this area, and that complexity, I guess, is the thing that they're struggling with. Their, you know, their essential view of their self, their self esteem, whatever you want to call it. What would you say to interracial adoptees that are struggling?
Yeah, I would say, you know, don't care what anyone else says. Keep doing what you want to do. And if that's a child that you want to get from abroad is a different color, then do it, because it doesn't matter what color of their skin they are. They are still a child that needs a home. And you might have things thrown your way. People might say things, but that's a small minority of insecure and just idiots. You know, it's irrelevant what color your skin is. You know, a child is a child, a mother is a mother, and a father is a father, regardless if you are blood related. You know, it's about nurturing a child and bringing them up as your own. You know, it doesn't matter who they are, what they are. And to, I think, like I said earlier, is to be very open with absolutely everything. Like I said about family members saying things about us, and why would you want to adopt those types of children? It's to be open with that and not keep any secrets, because it's when the secrets are kept, that's when it backfires.
Yeah. You talked about your mum and wanting to carry on the work that she's doing in the adoption. She did in the adoption space. You know, you mentioned her being sitting on adoption councils. So for people outside the UK, these are within the public sector, within the government. These are the groups that assess adoptive parents. What are the key messages that you'd want to say to adult adoptees listening? What would you be? We've talked a lot about, you know, adoptive parents, adopters. Mm. What would you like to say to adult adoptees listening?
Oh gosh, I think just enjoy it, you know, and ask questions. You know, I think the one thing that people don't do is not ask enough questions, and I think the more questions you ask, the more people that you hear about their stories, the more that you'll understand your journey. Because, you know, I think a lot of people out there, I understand, don't really want to know about their journey. They want to sort of get on with their lives because, you know, in their eyes, they're happy. Yes, of course, everyone is different. But I think if there's someone out there that is struggling, wants to know more, it's to listen and sort of speak to others and just understand where they're coming from and how they dealt with things, because you know, you're not alone. I think people just always think that they are alone in everything in life. And especially with adoption, I think you do feel even more alone, because I know this full very well, because I have questioned myself, and I'm sure you have too. You think, why was I adopted? Did no one want me? And it does sort of go around in your head. Why did they not want me? You know, you feel abandoned, you know, and I think you really do need to ask questions and speak to others so everyone can understand and help you with their own experiences for you to be able to deal with yours too.
Yeah. We talked before we started recording about the the black and white of how can we have black and white when we're talking about transracial adoption? We were talking about how people make it. Sorry, listeners. We were making it about there seems to be two camps. There's the trauma camp, and there's the unicorns camp of adoption. So, what's your view on this?
Oh gosh. I understand that everyone's experiences are going to be different, and you know, there are going to be some people out there that don't have the best experiences, you know, unfortunately, that's just the nature of the game. However, I want people to really understand and realize that this isn't what it's like all the time. You know, that's a few things that have gone on that maybe are sort of focused on more. However, a lot of adoption stories, I would say pretty much a good high percentage, are fantastic stories with great outcomes. I mean, in particular, I'd love to say my story, because, you know, there's not many people in life who can say that they've been adopted internationally and then unfortunately their second mother passes away. Because in my eyes, a lot of people have said to me, it must hurt you even more because you've lost two mothers. And it, you know, thinking of it, that is upsetting. However, I was given this opportunity in life, and the setup that my family had given me to be able to live my life, especially with my mother not being around, is amazing. You know, I've been set up for life here, and, you know, I have done something with it, you know, my business. I'd like to say a really positive story, and yours as well, that adoption is a wonderful thing. And especially with my two sisters as well, and people that we still know and have been brought up knowing for years that have also been adopted too. They've got amazing stories as well. You know, yes, I understand there's going to be that unicorn side of it, and it's going to be all fluffy and amazing like mine, but there are going to be a handful that aren't. But like I said previously, it's understanding what that child needs and to help them with their journey of understanding of what has maybe possibly gone on in their life for them to feel like that. I mean, obviously I know the adoption probably has hit them really hard because they do feel abandoned. I guess that's one of the words that a lot of adopted kids feel. But you're not abandoned, because in my eyes, you're given a second chance in life, and grab it with both with both hands, because you only get one life. And, you know, what a great thing to say that you've been able to been given an opportunity to do things again, because I always say what my life could have been totally different if I wasn't in the UK. I could have been in Thailand, probably on the streets begging for money, you know, or been in the army, because it's compulsory out in Thailand that you have to do the army when you're a boy, you know. And obviously, fortunate for me, my parents got rid of my Thai passport, so I would never be called back. But again, my dad did say to me the other day, you know, it would be useless for you to be in the Thai army because you can't speak a word of Thai. So could you imagine me? I'd be like, what are they saying? What do I do? I'd have to, it'd all be hand gestures and everything. I mean, I don't know. I would be useless. But it's just one of those things. But I just want people to understand, and for people to realize that not every story is bad. Adoption is a wonderful thing. And I think everyone in their life, whether you've got a child that is biologically yours, I think should also look at the opportunity of adopting as well.
Yeah. I was just picturing, you know, like, I'm wondering whether Thai people do like British people do when they don't get, I was thinking about you on a parade ground, right? In Bangkok or something like that. You know, like British people shout at people when the foreigners don't understand us, you know.
Yeah.
We just think that if we talk louder, then you know we're going to get our we're going to get what our all day breakfast or whatever that we're getting that we're wanting, or beer, you know, that we want from this stranger. You know, whether Thai people would have just shout, you know, the sergeant major, who's normally, you know, is already at a high level of decibels, would have shouted even more at you because you didn't understand him. You know,
I would have been, I don't know, put on the naughty step all the time, not because I'd be naughty, but because I genuinely wouldn't understand what they're asking me to do. It would be useless for a child that has been brought in and raised in the UK to go and then go back to Thailand to fight in the army. Because what could you understand? Nothing.
You would have been doing the, you would have been cleaning the parade ground with your toothbrush or whatever the Thai equivalent.
I would be spit polishing the shoes as well and everything. No, I would be useless, but. You know, that's one of the things when you think my parents, thank God they were told that, you know, when I was younger to get rid of my passport, because, you know, it has been heard that kids internationally that have been adopted from overseas, because people think dual nationality, that have a British passport and an Asian passport, it's a fantastic thing. Yeah, it is a fantastic thing, but not when you've got to go and serve in the army. You know, it's just one of those things. And I'm not saying that some kids don't want to do it. Some kids probably wanted to do it, but not every child. I think people should have an option to be able to or not.
Yeah. I just wanted to take you back to something you said a couple of minutes ago about, you know, the loss of your second mother or, and thinking of it, you said the word thinking of it. And I think that is a crucial thing. It's a crucial thing for me in terms of kind of my experience. It's kind of, I just want to drop in a bit of a teaching, sharing, coaching kind of point here, really. So what I did about 6 years ago is I read this book called The Primal Wound, which essentially says that, you are wounded, you know, we are wounded, adoption wounds people.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's why I feel the way I do. And then I realized it's not true, because my level of self-esteem, my happiness, my confidence, my resilience, not like my world has gone up and down in my life. And adoption is a historic event that happened. All right, you've got to guess how old I am now.
Oh,
just be truthful on this, right? You don't need to try and kid me on.
Oh, I don't want to be rude.
Just guess.
50?
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I'm 54, so not too bad. You're close. So 54 years ago.
Okay.
An event happened to me.
Right.
As in, my mother gave me up, my birth mother gave me up for adoption.
Yeah.
So that's like one past event.
Yes.
It's a fixed event. We're not going to change that. But my mood has been up and down since then.
Mm.
Right? My mood, my level of self-esteem, my level of self-worth, my level of, you know, how happy I am in my own skin, right?
Yeah.
Has gone up and down. It has varied. So how can a fixed event cause a variable experience? It can it?
Yeah. So
I'm pinning that anybody that's sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I think you're right. I think, you know, everyone's experiences are different, and I think, you know, back then yours must have been totally different, because obviously for you, you weren't, you know, I guess back then adoption was totally different to what it is now, wasn't it? It wasn't as common Am I correct?
It was more common, actually.
Oh, it was more common.
It was more common because there were the, so abortion, for example,
yes,
wasn't legalized in the UK until 1967. I was born on the 4th of January, so you know, I would, when I was conceived, she couldn't have had, she didn't have that option at my birth.
Right.
But what I'm trying to is, yeah, it has changed. It changed, and it was closed, and today it was different, and blah blah. Yeah, it was all totally different. But this thing, I'm trying to get to this point, right? I think that we pin our tail, we pin the tail on the wrong donkey. So we're looking to the past. That past event was fixed. My experience of life has been variable. So adoption cannot be the reason for a past event cannot explain a varying experience. It's actually to do with how our levels of consciousness are going up and down. Mm. That determines what we're thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought myself into a bit of a trauma reading this.
Yeah.
I started down the trauma trail.
So you're saying the more that you sort of looked into your adoption and everything, that's where the trauma started to begin, because you were finding out more information about things. And I guess it's almost like when you read a book or you're watching a TV program sometimes, the more that you're sort of invested into it and the more that you learn about things, the more that you get frustrated and angry because you start sort of questioning yourself, well, why did they do this? And
yes. Yes. And all that, but it's even simpler than that, right?
Okay.
I didn't believe I was wounded, right, until I read The Primal Wound.
Yes.
And then I, because I'm a sensitive soul, sensitive guy.
Yeah.
I got drawn into it. So I believed I was wounded, and I started focusing on my wounds. And then when I realized it's not true, I realized I was pinning the tail on the wrong donkey.
Yeah, I get it.
I was blaming something that happened 48 years at the time for my experience in the present. And that's not how it works.
Mm.
You know, one historic event cannot cause a variable experience. I'm exploring this at the moment because I think it's, I've seen it in other. I've been down the trauma rabbit hole, and it hasn't got too dark for me.
Mm.
I've been lucky in that respect, but I've seen it get a lot darker, and I know the further you go down it, and I'm not, you know, innocently we go down it. We don't go down it by choice.
Mm.
It's not a conscious choice to go down this trauma. It's a matter of believing.
Totally.
So for me, it's believing the rubbish in my head. Like if I can make this like about this, because it isn't just about adoption. Like believing that I wasn't good enough at business.
Yes.
You see what I mean? Like people told me, well, Simon, you know, you're not as good a salesman as your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. Or, you know, like business coaches that I had and mentors and stuff say, well, yeah, really, Simon, you know, business isn't your forte, you know, sales isn't your forte. You shouldn't be doing that. You should have somebody else to do that. And I believed that stuff, and it was totally wrong because I kept on hiring these people, and I always did better than them, despite the fact that they were supposed to be the ones that did it. So this kind of self-doubt, the negative voice in my head, and it's just doesn't talk the truth.
No, but you know what? I don't blame anyone if they feel like that. I think everyone has to experience things in their own way. And I personally think that, you know, you have to sort of go down these rabbit holes sometimes to discover yourself, you know, because you know, it's that that makes you who you are today, and that makes you feel comfortable with what's gone on in your life. And I think anyone that says everything's hunky-dory and perfect all the time, I think they're idiots. You know, I think you have to experience these things in life, and I'm sure that has changed your perspective on everything and has made you a better person that you are today, and understanding more as to why your birth mother did what she did, sort of thing.
Yeah, and totally, and yes, I totally agree. And the story that I use about this, and the reason I'm going on about this is because this is the light at the end of the light at the end of the tunnel. Oh. Turning back round from the trauma, instead of continuing down the trauma, the trauma rabbit hole, I turned round. Something happened. I had a new idea. I turned round and I could see the light. I could see the light back again, and then I moved that towards that way. And it wasn't. I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't go on a. I just had a moment. I had an insight, and that's what changed it. And I'm talking to you about it in the hope that it creates some more insights in the listeners, because that's what the podcast is all about, helping people along their learning curves. So the metaphor that I use about this is like, have you ever tried to be in like a swimming pool or playing in the on the beach, and you've got a ball and you try and push the ball underwater?
And it doesn't go down. Yeah.
It doesn't go down. So it takes a lot of effort to go down. So you might push it down. Like you might push it down a foot underwater. It takes a lot of effort to do that, right? But then when you let go of that ball, it springs back about 3 foot.
Yeah.
So that's how my life has been. It got darker, and then I bounced back, and I bounced back higher than I was before. And I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't been down the rabbit hole.
Sure. No, I think that's completely true. I always say you have to have the lows to have the highs. And when you have the highs, you come back fighting more than ever.
Yeah. So what would you like to call? I think that's fantastic. And it's prompted a question in me. What would you like to call this episode, Tom?
Oh, gosh. I really don't know. I guess I'd love it to be something like "Not all adoptions are bad." Or, you know, I don't know. It's, I guess, a positive note that, you know, don't be afraid, you know, just enjoy the ride and be open, because, you know, asking questions and being open about absolutely everything with those that you have adopted or are going to adopt, are kept in the loop of where they come from. I think as long as you do that, you're going to have the best experience and the best life with that child ever, you know, and to just enjoy it.
Using
something out of that.
Yeah, yeah. What about something like a refreshing take on transracial adoption?
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something along that, a refreshing, because do you mind being called a transracial adoptee? Does that sound a bit yucky to you?
I think the only thing, if you say that, is it might make people think transgender.
All right, okay.
Because I always say, when people say transracial, I was like, but they use that expression also for transgender children. Transgender people, sorry. So I don't know, maybe international adoption? A refreshing view from an international adoption?
Okay.
I don't know.
When I go swimming this lunchtime, I'll mull it over. And
okay.
And listeners, you will know that because you'll be able to see it in the title.
It'll be a surprise.
is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess, you know, something I want to say again is if people want to know more about adoption, or they want to, or they are wanting to adopt and have no idea where to begin, then check out IAC on their website. So that is the charity that I work with closely, the Centre for Adoption, and they help you along the way with regards to adopting internationally or in the UK, and they will give you the support that you need from start to finish and beyond.
So, as Dominic says, he's an ambassador. He's an ambassador for the IAC. If you look in the show notes, there'll be links to both Dom's social media and also the IAC's website and social media. This conversation came around because Sat Winder, who's the chief executive of the IAC, he's been on the show. Check his episode out in the back catalogue of Thriving Adoptees. And I was having a conversation last week, and he told me about Dom and Dom doing this great ambassador work, and that's why Dom's here. Perhaps I should have started with that rather than that saying that at the end of the podcast.
I think we're more sort of wanting to talk about everything with regards to adoption, but we've said it at the very end, and I'm sure that is fantastic still.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Dom. It's been a great conversation. And
thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming on. And thank you for listening, listeners. See you all again soon. So speak to you again soon, as I should probably say, shouldn't I? Thanks a lot, listeners. Bye-bye.